Hi, and welcome to the Nat Decants podcast. I'm your wine-soaked host, Natalie McLean. One of the most beautiful wine regions in the world to visit is the Okanagan Valley in British Columbia. This story that I'm about to read to you was published in the May issue of Condé Nast Traveler magazine. Not only is the valley scenic, but the wines are absolutely delicious. As you know, I've been posting these podcasts of the newsletter on my site for several months now, and I really appreciate all the encouragement you've sent me to do this. I'd love to jazz them up a bit auditorily, and while it's too late for me to do anything about my voice, I thought it might be fun to add some intro music. So if you know of a website or someone who might be able to provide this for free or a really cheap but good bottle of wine, please let me know. You can email me via my site, natdecants@nataliemclean.com. But before we get to the story about the Okanagan, I'd like to tell you about this week's delicious recipe for curried chicken satay that comes from Amy Sherman, who's an excellent food and wine writer, recipe developer, and restaurant reviewer in San Francisco. She's the editor of Cooking with Amy, a food blog, and recently wrote Wine Passport, Portugal. I paired this dish with the 2005 Cave de Turckenheim Gewürztraminer Reserve from Alsace that I recommended from the July 21st wine picks that you'll find on my website. Amy's recipe, the details for which you'll find on the site as well, for onion tartlets would go really well with the 2006 Courabe Sauvignon Blanc from Marlborough region in New Zealand. And her turkey drumsticks braised in cranberry sauce would be spectacular with the 2005 Behringer 3rd Century Pinot Noir from the Central Coast in California. You can search for more recipes for hors d'oeuvres, appetizers, entrees, breads, and desserts now on the site. And if you'd like to submit recipes to be featured in this podcast and the newsletter with credits to you and your company, please send me an email via the site. We have two wine words to mention this week. The first word is weeper. This actually doesn't describe wine drinkers who get sentimental when they drink certain bottles. Rather, it refers to a bottle of wine that's weeping or slowly leaking wine from the cork due to a small space around it. This could be the result of a faulty cork or because the bottle wasn't stored on its side to keep the cork damp and therefore it dried and shrunk. A weeping wine isn't necessarily spoiled, just as a weeping drinker isn't necessarily maudlin. The second word is structure. Structure refers to the interplay and balance among the following characteristics in wine: flavor, acidity, alcohol, and tannin. Tannin is often less a factor in white wines, especially those that aren't aged in oak. If one of these elements dominates, the wine is not well structured. However, when these elements are balanced, the wine does indeed have good structure. It will likely age for years as each element develops in proportion and knits together with the others. I like a lot of structure in my life and in my glass. You can find more definitions in my wine glossary on the website. The question of the week is, what's the best technique for opening wine using a regular corkscrew? Well, unless you're an 18th century aristocrat for whom someone named Manuel will open the bottle, you're just going to have to learn to use a corkscrew. Fortunately, well-made corkscrews with sharply pointed worm screws give enough leverage to decrease the effort required to just a couple of pounds of pull. With center worm screws, position the point in the center of the cork and pull it out straight. Get the screw in deep enough to pull out the cork, but not so deep that you penetrate the bottom and push little pieces of cork into the wine. For pronged corkscrews, slide the prongs down in between the cork and the bottle neck, then gently rock the bottle back and forth while drawing the cork slowly upward. These corkscrews are useful for removing old and crumbling corks, when a conventional screw boring down through the middle might cause the cork to fall apart. But they don't have a lever, so there is a lot more effort required, and possibly one of those less than dignified positions with the bottle between your knees. Although I can't answer all emails I receive, which are about several hundred a day, I do try to answer as many as I can in the frequently asked wine questions of my site. And in my new book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, I also tackle many aspects of wine from grape to glass, how wine is made, marketed, matched with food, consumed and cellared. I do this mainly through storytelling, taking my readers behind the scenes of the international wine world, visiting its most evocative places, and sharing adventures with its most colorful and hilarious personalities. As usual, if you'd like to find out more about upcoming wine events, wines to buy, and other newsy bits and gossip that are part of my free e-newsletter, you can sign up for it at nataliemaclean.com. And now, sit back, pour yourself a glass of something, and enjoy this week's story entitled Napa North. From the deck of the terrace restaurant, we get a sweeping view of the vineyards clinging to the slopes that plunge down into a sapphire blue lake. My husband and I are here to visit Mission Hill Family Estate Winery, one of 133 wineries in the 120-mile-long Okanagan Valley. Cradled in south-central British Columbia, the valley was once best known for peaches and beaches, but today visitors are just as likely to come for wining and dining. Okanagan is a word from the local Aboriginal language meaning from the top, and that's just the view we enjoy today as we sit down to lunch under vine-draped trellises. The Okanagan, which produces 90% of the wine in BC, is one of four viticultural areas, including the Similkameen Valley, the Fraser Valley, and Vancouver Island. Mission Hill, just outside the town of Kelowna, in the middle of the valley, is a good place to start a tour. The two-hour drive down Highway 97 to the southern tip of the valley takes us past many vineyards, all nestled between orchards heavy with apples, peaches, and apricots, and set among cool stands of breezy pines. Mission Hill was founded in 1981 by Anthony Von Mendel, who was no novice to the booze business. He also owns Mike's Hard Lemonade. After a $37 million renovation in 2002, the modern terracotta building has classical Greek and Roman arches, with a 2,000-barrel room carved into the hillside rock face, and an open-air amphitheater for summer Shakespeare plays. Every afternoon at noon, the sound of four bells at the top of the soaring 12-story tower peal out over the hills. The winemaker at Mission Hill since 1992 is John Symes, formerly of New Zealand's Montana Winery. His Chardonnay won the Avery Trophy for Best Chardonnay at the prestigious International Wine and Spirits Competition in London, England. The estate has won other awards for its Pinot Gris, Syrah, Merlot, and Ice Wine. Indeed, many Okanagan wineries have won international medals. Despite this, the wines aren't well known abroad because of their small production, only 6.7 million liters of wine compared to the 40 million liters for Niagara, Ontario, Canada's largest wine region. As well, 85% of BC wine is sold within the province. Nonetheless, the Okanagan is growing quickly, and like many other regions, it's developing a cuisine to complement its wines. At Mission Hill, we enjoy Chef Michael Allemeyer's braised veal cheeks, venison salad, saddle, and coffee salt-crusted lamb with the winery's spectacular Bordeaux blend called Oculus. In the afternoon, we drop into several small family-run operations, including Summerhill Estate Winery, noted for its organic sparkling wines. On the grounds, a giant 12-foot bottle of bubbly pours into a 9-foot wine glass. There's also a 4-story replica of the giant pyramid done in white Egyptian limestone and used for aging the wine with the help of sacred geometry, according to owner Stephen Sipes. Both Summerhill and the nearby Quail's Gate Winery have great restaurants overlooking Lake Okanagan. Summerhill's Smokehouse Veranda Bistro offers penne with house-smoked salmon, which goes perfectly with its crisp bubbly. Other specialties include fresh seafood, wild meats, and organic produce. Quail's Gate, housed in the site of a historical 1870s home, is best known for its Pinot Noir and Old Vines Maréchal Foch wines. On its Old Vines patio restaurant, they serve local fare such as salmon with Okanagan lavender jelly and seared Arctic caribou in a port and red currant sauce. Although Canada is best known for ice wine, the dessert nectar made from grapes naturally frozen on the vine Both BC and Ontario produce outstanding dry table wines. Cool climate grapes such as Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Riesling, and Pinot Noir all flourish in the northern Okanagan. But the hotter southern valley allows winemakers to make complex reds from Syrah, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Merlot. As we drive south, the lake narrows and the air is noticeably warmer. It's a little known fact that the South Okanagan is Canada's only pocket desert, the last 40 miles of Mexico's Sonoran Desert. Less than 6 inches of rain falls here every year, so where the arid hills aren't irrigated for vineyards or orchards, cacti and sagebrush bloom. The hot days allow the grapes to ripen fully, but the chilly nights and the cooling influence of the lake preserve the fresh fruit character in the wine. That hospitable climate for viticulture is probably why winemaking goes back to the 1860s here, when a Roman Catholic missionary named Charles Padozzi first planted grapes. Those early wines were excruciatingly rustic, and it wasn't until the 1980s that vintners ripped out inferior grapes and replanted classic European vines. At about the same time, many went to Europe or California to improve their craft. Winemakers from abroad also came here to make their mark on a region with burgeoning potential. As a result, the Southern Valley has many terrific small wineries: Nickel Vineyards, Poplar Grove, La Friends, Lake Breeze, Red Rooster, Blue Mountain Farm Winery, Black Hills, and Township 7. Some even have waiting lists for customers anxious to buy a few bottles of their limited production. One of the newest is Nemmick Cellars, pronounced Inkameep, North America's first winery owned and operated by Aboriginals, the Osoyoos Indian Band. Located on the Lake of Osoyoos, just a mile from the Washington state border, Inkameep is a joint venture between the band and Vincor Canada, a conglomerate which also owns Inniskillen, Jackson Triggs, and other wineries. The Soyos band had actually been growing grapes and selling them to other wineries since 1968. But in 2002, the entrepreneurial natives opened the winery and now produce Chardonnay, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Noir, Merlot, and a Bordeaux blend. These wines are made from some of Canada's oldest vines and are quickly gaining attention. The 2002 Merlot won a silver medal at the Los Angeles County Fair. The winery is next to another band project, a 23 million Spirit Ridge Resort and Spa, with 30 villas and 64 suites done in an adobe-style theme with terracotta tiling and local maple and alder furniture. A short walk from the winery is the Desert Cultural Center, where you can learn about the native people as well as desert plants and wildlife. Later that evening, we have dinner at another well-respected establishment, Burrowing Owl Winery's Sonora Room Restaurant. Looking out over a glass of Merlot at the valley splashed with red, orange, and violet shadows by the setting sun reminds me of another local phrase. It's a Aboriginal phrase meaning place of wellness, tranquility, and serenity. That's it for this week. If you enjoyed this podcast, please do let others know about them. There's more info in the book Red, White, and Drunk All Over and my free e-newsletter at nataliemaclean.com. Tune in another month's time for another exciting episode. In the meantime, drink up. Cheers, Natalie. This podcast and its content are a copyright of Natalie McLean, 2007.